T-shirt. Black rock. Black rock. T-shirt.
Welcome to JevCast 7. 8. 7. 8. Welcome to JevCast 8. We have with us this morning Bobby Ryder, Hilton Head legend, maybe New Jersey legend too. I would imagine you were a legend. You were a legend there.
I actually hate that term, by the way.
Legend. Yeah. I know. No. You know what's so funny about that? This is perfect. Do you know that that is a total... Everyone says the word legend now in social media.
Yeah, the legendary.
Or they'll see a baby. And I know, I'm not being mean here, but they'll see like a little kid like that can like do something way ahead of his... way ahead of schedule, like a little baby like starts walking at like 9 months. Oh my God, he's a legend. He's a little legend. It's become a huge term on social media. And I think there's people that say that about me too, like Hilton Head legend, Jevin Daly. And I just think, well, tell me something I've done that's legendary.
Exactly.
But I mean, truth be told, we both... I think, have you been playing here twice as long as I have?
35 years, maybe.
Oh, you've been playing here 35?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to think when I...
Yeah, I came here in August of 84.
Oh, you did? Okay, yeah. So I came here right before that. But you were doing something on a... I was attempting to do it. My gigs were kind of like an attempt at a gig.
I came here from Hawaii.
Ooh.
I was actually the second time. I left Atlanta. I was working in Atlanta. My bosses in Atlanta went to Hawaii to Oahu, opened a hotel there, and they brought me and my whole band there.
Oh, wow.
And ironically, on the way there, we got a call to come to Hilton Head.
What, for like a big private, like a convention?
Yeah, like
or something?
A week gig, you know.
Yeah.
And I said, where's Hilton Head?
Yeah.
And I said, well, we came in here. I said, this place is pretty cool, you know. So we were at the Hyatt.
I was just going to say, yeah. It was
yeah, the old Club Indigo.
Yeah, right.
And we did a week there. And so I went to Hawaii for almost 2 years. And then I came back, and I was in Atlanta, and I wasn't home 2 days. I got a call to come back to Hawaii again, back to Maui this time.
Mm-hmm.
And the weirdest thing, I get a call to come to Hilton Head again. And I had 3 weeks before I was going, so I said, yeah, I'll go, you know. So we went, and at the time there was the lounge manager, Ursula Elkins, told me that they're going to build a new hotel called the Mariners Inn.
Oh, yeah.
And if I ever got back, you know, to call them, they'd like to have me. And about a year later, I came back, and I'm in Atlanta, I'm out of work, and I called them, and the first thing they said is, well, I don't know if we can afford you. And I said, I'm out of work. Well, I didn't say that, but I said, yeah, I'm out of work. You can afford me. And I said, I'll tell you what. I said, I'll put a band together. You pay the band. You give me food and lodging. Free golf.
Wow.
And pay me whatever you think I'm worth.
We were just talking about
and
that.
And I stayed there almost 14 and a half years.
Whoa. Oh, my God. How many nights a week was that?
Started out 6 nights.
Holy.
Yeah, we did about, I guess, 8 or 9 years of 6 nights a week.
Whoa. Yeah. That'll
get
you tight.
And then they started trailing off as new people came into the hotel. And they wanted to change this and they wanted to change that. And so on and so forth.
Yeah, but then as soon as that was happening, there was all kinds of other places, like, I don't know if you played these places, but like the White Parrot or Amadeus. Were those more rock and roll?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I know my parents used to play there. But then, of course, how long the Jazz Corner's been there? It's 20 years.
Yeah. Again, long story, but I was actually going in to sign a contract for my 15th year at the, then I guess it was the, maybe the Omni Hotel. Mm-hmm. They changed the name.
Right.
They changed it 3 or 4 times. And I walked in and I had a pen in my hand to sign the contract, and they said, "We changed our mind." What do you mean you changed your mind? Jeez. We decided to go in a different direction. So kind of in a panic, we decided to open up our own supper club, nightclub. And it just didn't work out. I mean, at the time, the Pearl, I think, was opening. The Jazz Corner was opening. We were underfunded. And it just didn't work out.
What was the name of your club that you tried to...
Club Crescendo.
Uh-huh.
And, I mean, we got nailed on so many things. I used an out-of-town band. And our mutual friend Cork James blasted me.
Corky James, yeah. He's a legend.
Yeah, he's a legend.
He is really. He's actually, yeah.
I'll tell you some stories off camera about him.
Did you just see where I put him on?
Yeah.
I mean, I had to. Yeah. You know, hey, Corky, you're getting all the publicity you wanted, buddy.
Yeah.
Are you happy now?
But yeah. Anyway, so I did that, and again, you know, out of work and didn't know what to do. Met a guy that showed me how to use tracks. And
you started doing a solo gig.
I started doing the solo gig, you know.
And no one cared. I bet they loved it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, kind of.
I mean.
And then Mark Husman helped me a lot with, I always call Mark and Lee's my angels, because they laid down a lot of tracks for me, recorded a lot of tracks
for
me, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I'm using mini disc players.
Oh my gosh, yeah. I had a mini disc player. Yeah.
And then from there, it obviously went to the iPad. And
right.
And so now I mean, of course, every chance I get, I want the band, but.
Sometimes it's not in the stars.
It's not in the budget. And,
right.
So that's kind of my story.
That's it. That's your
yeah.
entire story.
Yeah, that's
Doubt it.
It. Done.
Yeah, right. No, the story lives on. I mean, what do you think about what's going on? What do you think about Bluffton these days? Are you gung-ho about all the development? I mean,
no, of course not.
But you do like, you do like a nice golf course. I mean,
I
and
like
you do
a nice
like
golf
you do
course.
Like places to play.
When, after our club folded, and we were in a little bit of trouble, and it took a few years to bounce back. And one day my wife said, I think we're in good shape. Let's go look, you know, for a home. And I said, where? She said, Bluffton. I said, Bluffton? I ain't moving to Bluffton.
Right.
that's like, I'll be living in the witness protection program,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And actually, we came here to Eagles Point. It was the first that we saw this house, and there was all these, you know, signs leading right up to it. And 30 minutes later, we signed a paper.
I mean, everybody, it seems to me like a lot of people that we know are all, I mean, I live out here.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's
a lot of.
But yeah, the growth is crazy. You know,
it is crazy, yeah.
So, I don't know.
We were sort of poking, I was sort of poking fun at like the super Walmart and all that kind of stuff. But I guess the stuff I don't see is, or I think the stuff that none of us really talk about is look at all the jobs it's created, or, you know, and there, I mean, how many kids are being born? There's 12,000 residents here now, and when I went to middle school down there off of near Calhoun, you know, I went to middle school there. Mm-hmm. That's where I picked up saxophones, was playing. But there was like only like, I don't know, 600 or 800 people, I think, living there.
Well, I always say that if I left town on a weekend and came back on a Monday night, and I'm coming on 278, and I saw a car, I knew who it was.
Yeah, right.
It was like, hey, Joe, hey,
yeah,
Bobby.
Now
it's like, oh my God.
Gridlock on Saturdays.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Why did you pick up the saxophone? Or were you weren't a singer first, were you?
No.
I didn't think so.
No.
I mean, I don't really, you know, we don't, I think that we see each other, because of social media, we're able to sort of, like, peek at what...
Follow each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I started... we had a next-door neighbor who was a trumpet player. This is in New Jersey.
Right.
And who went on to be a pretty famous trumpet player. His name was Ed Pulser.
Mm-hmm.
But he played his way through college. And my parents, being poor, thought that would be a good thing for me, so they started me on clarinet.
That's unheard of for parents to say, hey, we think you should be a musician.
Yeah. Well, not really a musician, but my father was in a bar business this whole
life. So in other words...
So they thought, like, a good sideline, but if I went to college, I could get some weekend gigs.
Yeah.
So they wanted me to emulate, basically, him.
Wow.
So they started me on clarinet. And I played a little bit of clarinet, I mean, for a couple of years, but you know, then the saxophone was like the cool thing to play, you know, so
yeah.
I switched to saxophone, and by the time I graduated high school, I didn't want to go to college, and so I joined a band and went on a road and been doing it ever since.
Whoa. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you don't really, I don't think I've ever really seen a picture of Benny Goodman and thought, that's cool.
Yeah.
Even though I think Benny Goodman was a really cool, you know.
It's one of those things. I still have my clarinet. My father bought my clarinet in a pawn shop for $50.
Yeah.
And I still have it. And I was offered a lot of money for it today.
Well, because you're a legend.
And No. It's a...
Oh, it's a good clarinet.
It's a good clarinet.
Yeah, it's like a con.
It is a con.
It's a con.
Yeah,
yeah. And but you're not, though. You're not a con. I've heard that. I've been called a con. I've been called a con before by. But you know, okay, that leads me to that leads. I mean, we can come back and talk about all that horn stuff, but the entertainer. When did you realize? Were you an entertainer as a kid? I mean, did you make people? Were you a shy kid? You don't seem like a shy guy. I mean, you're rolling up here in a red and black Mustang with white leather shoes on. I mean, when did you realize you had style? How about that? That might be a better question.
From my father. Again, my father was in the bar business. Like I said, he was a bartender for over 50 years. But he had his, if I can remember correctly, his Tuesday night out. And that's when he would get dressed, ask me to shine his shoes for him, to, you know. And he would go out on a Tuesday night to reciprocate to all the waitresses and bartenders that used to come in to where he worked. So
he would go check them out.
So he would always tell my mother, look, I got to give back. And then he'd wind up in a card game somewhere. But he always dressed.
Right.
You know. And I guess that's where I got it.
Rubbed off on you.
Got it from. You know?
Yeah. And as a bartender, I mean, you have to have personality as a bartender. So I always tell people, if the food is good somewhere, that's nice. But if the people are good somewhere, that's where I want to go. Because I want...
Oh, yeah.
I want to be... When I go somewhere to eat... Or if I go, I don't really go places and have a beer. I probably should go more often, but I go there for the people because I want them to talk to me.
Same thing.
Yeah.
I mean, 90% of the time when my wife and I go out, we like to sit at the bar. You know, obviously, because of the bartenders, or, you know, you always get to talk to the person on the side of you, or meet people.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
My dad also drove a bus for a short period of time for, I'm going to say, Artie Shaw.
Oh, wow. Like, he drove Artie Shaw's tour bus.
Yeah. But then he was offered a job bartending and probably another $5 a week or something.
And plus he was home.
And he took it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Artie Shaw was, that's early 50s?
No, that's in the 40s.
That's in the 40s.
Yeah, he was bartending. Very famous big band place in New Jersey was Frank Daly's Meadowbrook, where all the big bands played. And my father bartended right down the street. And they'd have two rooms upstairs, and the band leaders would stay there, like a Tommy Dorsey, or, you know, they would stay there. And my father got to know, you know, these guys, and then everyone, they would drive to Paterson or get a ride to Paterson, New Jersey, to drive back to New York. And a lot of times my father would drive the guys for a couple of bucks or...
Oh, so he was all... So your father was a jazz fan.
He was a big band fan.
He was a big band fan, yeah. I think my...
But he was, you know, 21 years old, 22 years old, and then I guess through that association, got a job driving a bus, and then... But went back to bartending.
Right.
So, yeah.
What do you remember about Buddy Holly? What do you remember? So there was big bands, which can be, how big can a big band be? 20 pieces or 40? Not 40.
17 to 27.
Okay, right.
I think. Yeah.
So everybody's in a bus and everybody's traveling around because you couldn't drive. There weren't like guys driving separate cars.
Oh, if they did, they had six guys in the car.
Right.
You know.
Right. So for some of you guys who don't know, that was a huge, the Tommy Dorsey, that was a big, that was pre small bands or big bands.
Yeah. So I mean, Sinatra would, you know, just pictures of Sinatra sitting up front with Tommy Dorsey on a bus.
Right.
You know? Traveling, you know.
And there were huge ballrooms and everyone would go dance.
Yeah.
And then along came rock and roll, right? What year was that? 1955?
I guess 50, yeah.
Or Elvis,
probably.
Maybe?
No, I think Bill Haley.
Uh-huh, Bill Haley in the Comets, right.
Yeah.
So from what I've read, all of a sudden the bar owner said, well, why are we going to pay this 12-piece band? And all the kids were screaming, and the hair was getting longer.
Yeah.
And Little Richard, you had like different circuits, you know. So what year did you start your first band? Or do you remember? I'm sure you do.
64 or 65.
So, and that was right when, right as the Beatles hit. In what year? Was 64 or was it 62?
I think it was 62.
Yeah. So 62. Yeah. I Want to Hold Your Hand came out or something. And so, what was your band? Just like a quintet or a quartet?
Five piece band. That
right. And had all the big, had all those large bands sort of dissipated aside from like Duke Ellington or somebody that could afford.
Yeah, there was. I mean, again, you know, all that was a little before my time, but I can still remember buying or getting for Christmas some Sinatra albums and
with an orchestra.
That's, you know, yeah, they were, you know, out in the early mid '60s, with the Rat Pack was out in Vegas and still using, you know, big orchestras and stuff like that. But as far as the touring orchestras, it was done. It was done.
It was done, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, rock and roll pretty much, you know, did away with the big bands.
Right, because there was a bass player, a guitar player, maybe a keyboard player, yeah, and a drummer, and yeah, that was it.
Pretty much it.
Yeah, I mean, because, you know, and I see, I see pictures of, you know, Elvis on stage or Little Richard on stage or you know, when I did the Buddy Holly, I subbed for Dave Kimball at the Buddy Holly show the year my wife became pregnant with our first daughter, which was 2007. And until then, the only Buddy Holly that I'd ever heard, unfortunately, was, I'm trying to think where I'd heard it, you know. I'd never been really a fan of, I'd always kind of been more of a fan of the 60s psychedelic maybe music, right, or even like, yeah, or even, you know, I got into music. When I was playing the saxophone, I would try and learn stuff off MTV, and then when I saw like heavy metal stuff, that to me, I mean, became that was like the cool thing. I wanted to do that. How important, or why did you start the entertaining aspect?
Traveling. I don't remember exactly, but I had a manager that put me with a band. There was three girls and three guys, and rock. I mean, we were doing solid rock and roll.
Oh, okay. You
know? And then the, you know, touring, and then the band broke up, and there was two girls left. And myself, we picked up a drummer. The manager decided to split the girls and put me in the middle for a visual thing. Right. But they both sang, and I just played saxophone.
Oh. You
know? And we were doing pretty good, except I was just playing saxophone. And I said, and I was announcing. I was, you know, I would be calling the tunes and,
yeah,
and then stepping back and playing saxophone. So I said, man, I'd like to sing a song. So I learned a song, and it went over pretty good.
What was that song? Do you remember?
No. No.
But was it a rock tune?
It was a rock tune.
It was a rock tune.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I kind of liked it. You know, I said, you know, applaud and everything else. And from there, I started singing more. And then I basically became a front man.
Right.
And then I've been, you know, quote, a front man ever since.
Yeah, I mean, from what everything that I hear about when people mention Bobby Ryder, they always mention the banter.
Yeah, I'm, you know, I used to say I'm a throwback. And I actually, I was thinking about this last night, and I said, you know, no, I'm not a throwback, because there's, everybody's a throwback. You know, I mean, everybody's doing something that someone has
done. Been done, yeah, has been, yeah, done, yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. I mean, I like singing Sinatra, you know, and the Rat Pack stuff. I like that era of music.
Right.
So I do a lot of it, but I'm not doing it maybe in the style. I'm doing it more of my style,
mm-hmm,
you know, but you know, you got Bublé out there, you got Harry Connick out there, you know. No one is calling them throwbacks, you know.
They're breathing new, yeah.
They're putting new life into old stuff,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's,
I mean, look at Bublé's Christmas album. I mean, yeah, that's, is that the, like, the best-selling Christmas, yeah, album of all time,
probably,
or something?
It's great. I mean, I think the kid is great.
But he's doing Bing Crosby, but he's, I mean,
but yeah, he'll take, like I mean, you just said Christmas, he'll take White Christmas, and he's doing it almost like the Drifters did, you know, the doo-wop White, mm-hmm, Christmas, with a big band behind him,
yeah,
you know, with a 15, 17 piece band behind him, you know,
right,
and it swings, and
yeah,
so it's a combination of both things.
But I was listening to you guys do Just a Gigolo this morning off your Sweet Jazz Recordings. Okay. But it sounded like that was in a studio, but then I thought all those things were done live at the Jazz Corner. And if they were, I was pretty blown away by all the harmonies, you know?
Well, it was recorded at the Jazz Corner, and then the vocals were done by Mark Husbands and I in his house.
Dude, that was really cool, though. I mean, whether, you know, I mean, okay. But
so he's singing harmony. He's
I mean, you know, but one of my, he's a good singer then, okay? Mark, I've never heard you sing. I thought that was great. I have heard him sing. I've seen a lot of videos of his solo show.
Yeah.
But I like harmonies a lot. You know, I like vocal harmony and stuff. And I thought that was really cool. And there's also a young kid who's maybe in his 30s now who's really done some cool stuff with jazz. But I can't think of his name. Jamie Cullum. I don't know if you've heard of Jamie Cullum. But yeah, he's kind of done some cool stuff. There's actually a young girl singer that was at the jazz camp. I went in there to... Martin Lesh invited me to go over to the jazz camp's marketing class. You know, so I go in there wearing a hat I made or a shirt I made, or I had some stickers I gave some of the kids. But I think that what comes out of the guy on stage's mouth sometimes is going to really resonate with people better than what comes out of the horn or out of the guitar. I mean, I don't know. Like, I've always kind of looked at, I always thought to myself, man, if I, you know, like at midnight when the show, or for a lot of my gigs early on, the show was over at 2.
Yeah.
So at 3 in the morning, I was always thinking, this is really what's happening, is what's being said right now. But it took me a long time to, like, get that up on the mic or something.
Patter is more important than anything. You've got to be able to, you know, to talk.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that
you did it in there.
Yeah.
Bobby walks in there and goes, and you know, he knew it was coming.
Yeah.
He knows you.
Of course.
And I think that's the hardest. You don't know a lot of times you're playing for complete strangers, so the delivery of sarcasm and the pillow, the audience, is important to me. You walked in there, I need some coffee. Dude didn't bat an eye in there. It was funny, and I think
but he knows you. He knows me, and if, you know, he knows I'm not
You're not being rude. What happens, I know that occasionally what you say must get misconstrued, or does it occasionally, or does it happen
occasionally.
A few times a year?
More than that.
Somebody's not, right. So what's the first thing that comes to your head when someone in the audience isn't ready for them to, do you single people out in the crowd?
I have. But I think as you get older with anything else, you think before you speak. And I find myself thinking a little bit more. Whereas, you know, years ago I would just blurt out, you know, asshole.
Most
I have
of the time
called people assholes right
sure,
from the microphone.
Sure,
and,
well,
you know,
I think I've done it once.
And, yeah, right.
But, you know, but usually that gets a laugh.
It can.
Unless this guy... Or female, male.
True.
There's always that person in the audience that feels like people 1%, 1 out of 100 or 1,000 people don't like getting called out. And to everyone else in the room, it's funny, except for that
person.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, you have to read your audience. You're talking about the Jazz Corner. I can walk into the Jazz Corner and I'm scoping. I'm just looking, you know.
Looking for what?
Just to see the attitude of people, mm-hmm. or, you know, any little sign that, you know, this could be a good crowd. This could be, I don't know, you know. And I'm the opposite. A lot of times you walk into the jazz corner and the first thing, you know, one of the staff will say, man, it's a noisy crowd tonight. They're loud. You know, and I'm going, okay, that's cool.
That's a good thing.
They're having a good time.
That's a good thing,
you know?
Yeah.
And inadvertently, I start, and guess what? Boom. They're right down, you know. They're listening, you know. But you got to read, you know. And my guys will tell you, I am the worst. I'll put sets together. And I'm like, you know, here's our opening, and, you know, I'm at the second song, now we're changing that.
Right.
Right on stage, man. No, right. This ain't going to work tonight.
We're going to do this.
We're going to do that. And
but it has to, I mean, the flow, you can't, I mean, when was the last time you came out with a ballad?
Oh, I do a lot of ballads.
You come out with a ballad?
Oh, open with a ballad.
No, I'm just asking. Oh, no. I'm just curious, yeah.
Never.
Right. That was my point. I mean, I think that's the funniest. I think you have to know, you have to hit them, you know, and then where do you put that? Where do you?
It's usually the third or fourth tune in the set before I do a ballad. Same way with saxophone.
Uh-huh.
You know, a manager many years ago says, "Do not open with a saxophone song."
Yeah, you're right.
Let him wait. Let him. Look at those horns there for a while. Is he going to play that?
Could you imagine that? Could you imagine if there was saxophone in every song? I mean, unless it was like Artie Shaw was a sax player.
No, clarinet player.
Clarinet player. But you know, if you're going to see John Coltrane, every song.
Of course.
But that's a small audience.
But I'm not a saxophone. I mean, I'm a saxophone player, but that's, you know, I'm.
Yeah, you're not rewriting the.
I'm an entertainer.
Yeah, you right.
Know, I play some saxophone. I sing some songs.
You play two saxophones at once.
Yeah, that's real hard.
But
have you done it?
Is playing guitar behind your head hard?
Yeah, exactly.
It's not.
Or with your teeth.
Do your teeth even ever touch this guitar? I mean, I read one time there was chippings of Jimi Hendrix's teeth on the ground. Right. I thought. There's chippings of bullshit all over the stage floor.
Here's a good example. Again, another old time musician. He told me, he says, look, he says, you can stand in front of the crowd and you can play 1,000 notes and just like this, all over the place, man. Or you could stand on your head and play half the notes and they'll think you're the greatest horn player that ever lived.
Well, because you're standing, look at that guy standing on his head right now. Can you imagine?
Exactly.
Or I think, you know, I kind of imagine you maybe going like, you could play it, you could play all the, every mode or every whatever. You know, kids always would say to me when they come in, I want to learn about the modes. And I'd say, no, we're going to learn how to play the vocal, the lyrics. And then I could imagine this might be the hottest moment of the solo. And then if you give someone a look in the crowd, that breaks down so many walls. And I remember my father saying to me, you know, oh, your mother would get up there and she would look people in the eye. And to me, that's become the most important thing. I don't wear sunglasses anymore. You know, I want to look into a stranger's eyes and I want to welcome them to the, without even saying anything, you know? And,
that's, you know, part of the thing that I really enjoy is if I have a couple in front of me or four people in front of me, and I'll pick one of those and I'll sing to them.
Right.
I'll sing to them. There's 100 other people sitting in the audience. I'm not going to sing to the audience right now. I am singing to her, you know. The other people will pick up the vibe from it, you know, but...
Well, sure, they're all watching YouTube.
They're watching, and...
Yeah.
And it, I don't know, it always seems to make that person feel so special. And by her feeling special, the crowd is picking up on it, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean...
That's one of the things I really enjoy doing. Or a young girl, or, you know, a kid, a 7-year-old kid that happens to be in the audience.
Yeah.
You know, come here. Let me sing a song to you.
Yeah.
You know? And you know what? They'll remember it too.
What are some of your favorite songs? Because I mean, does it have to be a well known song, or are you gonna gonna turn this person onto a song they maybe never heard before?
Possibly, yeah. You know, yeah. But I mean, for obviously an older person, you're not gonna do a today's ballad or today's song. So you know, you reach back. I mean. Classic example is It Had to Be You.
Mm-hmm.
It had to be you.
It had to be you.
So what's better than singing to somebody, say, it had to be you. I wandered around, you know, finally found somebody, you know. And they obviously recognize the song, you know. And it doesn't matter. Again,
a good song can cut. I mean, you don't have to know the song if the lyrics are great.
Exactly.
Yeah, and see, I know that song because of David Grisman, who was in Jerry Garcia's bluegrass band, Old and the Way. With the Grateful Dead would be touring around, and then when they were off, Garcia always had bands with like a Merle Saunders, or he had like Ron Tutt on drums from Elvis's band or whatever. But David Grisman, the mandolin player, has made a career off playing mandolin with other well-to-do, like Martin Taylor is a famous jazz guitar player who I saw in Savannah years ago at the Trustees Theater with my little brother, and they did a whole album of standards. So I'd never really heard It Had to Be You or Mood Indigo or Jeepers Creepers, you know, and then I started gigging. There's a jazz singer, Vic Varner in Buford, mm-hmm. and I started doing some gigs and kind of like hacking my way through some of those songs. But who, do you have favorite writers? Do you have, I mean, are you, do you, you just like good songs?
Yeah. And I you know, it's the same, you're talking about the type of music. I always tell people that, or musicians, to learn the book. And when I'm...
Standards.
Learn the book.
Yeah.
Because if you can play standards, you can play anything, you know?
I agree.
And, And that's again, going back to my father, when I started on clarinet, he decided to pick up clarinet.
And, to play with you?
Yeah. He was one of these guys. He could sit down at a piano and play piano.
Right.
You know? He decided to play clarinet. And he actually went for a couple of lessons, and then he stopped. But we would buy fake books.
In the key of C or whatever.
And 1,500 songs, and we would sit there and go page one.
Oh my gosh.
And play every song in the fake book. And I guess that's where, you know, my repertoire came from today, because there's not too many songs that I can't at least fake my way through.
Fake, I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you have like Ain't Misbehaving, you have like all the Willie Jordan stuff, and then you have like, what about these, do you play super hard songs like Satin Doll and Embraceable You and stuff?
Yeah, that's a real hard one.
I don't know, are they hard? I mean, they're hard to me, I don't know. See, I'm...
Yeah, I can't.
Yeah, you can play all that stuff.
I used to...
I don't know. What's hard? Someday My Prince Will Come?
It's hard. Giant Steps.
Oh, yeah, sure.
That's hard.
That was 57.
Yeah, which I cannot play.
Well, but you could probably play... Da, 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 da. You could probably play ahead of the song. Or you try.
Let me see if I got this right. It's the same changes to Moonlight in Vermont?
Supposedly, they're all 2-5-1s. Yeah. But see, I still don't... I had to leave the jazz camp. I taught there for 5 years. And I think what I was teaching kids was... Like when we were talking about when we were first sitting down, or we were over there, and I said, you know, learning music is great, but learning people, and also, please give me something. You know, you've run into Rick Hubbard, I'm sure, who's a pretty accomplished jazz guitar player. No one really knows.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I know. Neither did I until I went to Illinois with him one day. He did one show there, but he taught me. Give something, and I think also, if you're giving someone attention, that's better than a sticker, you know, or something.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, but I had to leave the jazz camp because I thought, I don't even know these guys. I took a lesson from Norm Gagne, and he was like, everything's a 2-5-1. So if you're playing in G, it's A minor, D, and or whatever.
A minor, D, and G. When I first started at the jazz corner, Norm was my piano player.
Yeah, he's a crazy guy.
Yeah,
he's an intimidating guy.
He is mellowed a lot.
I can imagine that back in the day he was probably scary or something.
Yeah. Yes.
His hair kind of, when I first met him,
the future.
Yeah, right. Let's get in the Alfa Romeo where we're going. You don't need tires or something. I had to leave the camp because I thought I don't even belong here because I don't understand. And
I'm the same way.
Well,
my wife has asked me to teach for a year. Why don't you teach? No, first of all, no, I don't. I am not that good to teach. The only thing that I think I would maybe someday try to teach is stage presence. You know,
that's what I like.
And I see a lot of these kids that will sing, but don't know how to hold a microphone. Don't know how to stand still and sing a song.
But isn't the greatest lesson do it 1,000 times or do it as much as you can? I mean, you were doing 6 nights a week.
Yeah.
You know, were you nervous when you got up there and sang your first song when a girl's there?
Yeah, sure.
You were nervous. Sure. But the thing I wanted to talk about with you most is, where does confidence come from? You think it's just in you?
I think so.
Think you got it from your father? You think
I think it has to come from within. Yeah, yeah. It's just like, you know what they say, charisma. You know, you can't buy it. Yeah, you know, it's just something that's inbred. You know,
I think the first time I met you, you had dark glasses on, but I don't know if you wear dark glasses.
No,
you don't. Mm-hmm. To me, if I would describe you to someone, I would say, this guy has like perfect hair. I thought you were wearing dark glasses because I don't even know if I looked you in the eye, because maybe I was a little intimidated at the music store. But that's part. Do you think intimidation is part of it?
God, I don't know. I don't. If I come across that way, it's certainly not intentional.
I mean, I'm not talking about scaring people, but do you think when you walk in a room, you want to own the room to a certain degree?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
I mean, do you do stuff like, so the kid behind at the golf store, whatever those say, pro shop, do you do that kind of, right when you walk up on the mic, do you feel like, I'm sure you, I have a feeling you do this.
Yeah, I own it. As soon as
you get there, you say something before it, you don't count a tune off. You don't seem like the kind of guy that counts.
We're going back to the jazz corner now. You know, everyone at the jazz corner is doing obviously their own thing.
But Earl or LeVon.
Yeah, but we're all kind of doing it the same. You know, the same way, but you know, variations.
Well, you're doing two sets.
You know, but. I'm introduced at the jazz corner.
Oh, yeah?
I have my bass player introduce me.
Oh, cool.
You know, so I'm... The show starts when, ladies and gentlemen, you know, and here he is, and I walk up on stage. So, because now I'm giving these people a Vegas, used to be kind of show, you know.
Yeah.
And same way with my dress, you know, I'm always in a suit. You know, and tie. As a matter of fact, I think a lot of the guys that used to work the jazz corner, you know, were up there in maybe a t-shirt or, you know, whatever, and they've asked
everybody to kind of
dress. And if you go back to, quote, the jazz area, great black performers.
Oh, sure. Miles was always in a suit.
Oh, my God.
Cannonball, always in a suit.
That was that was part of the,
I mean, until you see pictures of Mingus, you know, or, I mean, I think, or Monk started wearing a hat or something.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's cool, but, yeah. You know, I remember, Buddy Rich saying, when he first put his new, quote, big band together, I guess it was the late 60s, maybe 70, and he had them all in Edwardian suits, you know, I mean, like hip mod suits and everything. And they kind of revolted. They didn't want to dress up. And they put, I guess they put black t-shirts on. And they performed. Yeah. And he felt that they didn't play as well dressed casually.
He said they
played better when they were like soldiers, when they were dressed and, you know, it was, quote, showtime.
He was kind of scared. I mean, didn't he fire people on stage? There's something he did.
There's so many stories, and, you know, half of them are true. And,
right.
You know,
but, did he trash, did he smash drum kits, or was that really not?
No,
true?
I don't
Keith
think
Moon
so.
Did that.
No.
Okay.
No.
All right. Because no. I'm trying to think of something. I heard he did something crazy, like maybe like threw something.
Well, there's a story that he sharpened the edge of his cymbal because he'd wanted anybody to touch his drums, and there was a trumpet player. Again, this is a story.
Here's something.
Would walk up on the stage and always go like that to his cymbal as he passed, and he sharpened the cymbal, and the kid went up like this and cut his fingers, you know. I mean,
yeah, I saw him on an interview with like Dick Cavett or somebody, and he was very, I mean, his drumming. Do you remember when it was like Buddy Rich versus Elvin Jones or Buddy Rich? And it was like I guess that was marketing, because when Showbiz came in, you know, you had Jimi Hendrix setting the guitar on fire or something, and then you had all these jazz guys kind of laughing. Because I always tell people, I've told my students this for years, and I don't teach right now, but I always tell people, you're listening to the wrong guys. Jimi Hendrix is great, and Pink Floyd,
sure,
or all these guys, but the people that they idolize, the Miles Davises or the John McLaughlins or Joe Zawinuls or old Dolphy or whatever, like, they can play circles around the rock people, but the rock people have afros, or the rock people smoke cigarette, or the rock people, and I guess, you know, didn't Frank Sinatra walk on stage a lot of times smoking a cigarette or something?
Yeah, and a drink in the other hand,
right?
You know, and I 90% of the places that I work, I'll walk up, I'll have a drink in my hand.
Well, that's what we're selling,
but
right?
It's a prop.
Yeah,
it is a prop.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, you don't
tell you a great Buddy Rich story. I saw him live with his new. They were all young guys in the band, and he was opening for Dusty Springfield at Basin Street. And he came out, and they did a big band version of Uptight, Stevie Wonder.
Oh yeah,
and I was like, oh my god!
Wow!
And the people went like, you know, they went nuts.
Yeah.
And Buddy Rich says, yeah, well, thanks. He says, what's her name will be out, you know, after our set to do some more of that Mickey Mouse bullshit for you. So.
He connected and then lost the whole.
So, no, but, you know, everybody went like players. So, again, the story goes that her being like really pissed off sent him a gift, and he opened the gift, and it was a broken mirror.
Well, 7 years bad luck.
Whoa. So he's on the Carson show, and Carson asked him about the incident, and he says, Dusty Springfield. And she says, yay, Dusty Springfield. Let me see, Dusty Springfield. Oh, yeah, yeah. She looks like Duke Ellington when she wakes up in the morning.
Oh, boy.
That was... That was Buddy Rich.
Yeah, and you know, I mean,
but sadly, the thing with him though, he could back up his words.
Oh, he was definitely an amazing. I mean,
yeah,
I think a lot of rock drummers. I mean, if you read an interview with John Bonham, or if you read an interview with Keith Moon, I mean, yeah. Buddy Rich had a double kick drum, I think, or something, maybe a pedal design or something. I think
he was phenomenal. I love looking at the old YouTube videos of him
solo. Of him just doing solo. Yeah. But isn't it Mickey Mousey? And I'm trying to think of how to word this. He was an entertainer, but didn't think of himself. I mean, all that stuff and his facial expressions and wasn't he kind of theatrical with doing stuff?
Oh, like sure.
Press rolls and
sure.
I don't think he twirled sticks or anything.
No, he twirled sticks before he started his count off with the band. You'd see him, blah, 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 and he got 1, 2, 3, and he'd be in.
But, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, he would never solo and
do stuff.
No, but once he was playing,
it was all music.
He was playing.
Yeah.
He was playing.
And now, of course, you have you go to see Motley Crue and the guy and Tommy Lee's in a cage and it's spinning around. And I mean, that's what people love.
Whatever.
People love fire and people love smoke and people love.
People want to be entertained. I like all kinds of music. I mean, I have obviously my preferences, but the only kind of music that I don't like is music where you're playing for yourself, not for the crowd. You see some jazz guys, man, that are up there and their backs are turned to the audience, and they're just playing,
Yeah.
And it's like,
but those 20 people love them though.
If there Joe is Levon. 20.
Yeah, right. No, I know that there's, I follow, there's this great sax player in New York that lives in Park Slope named Tim Byrne. And he's an amazing sax player and he's an amazing composer and all that kind of stuff. And recently he's been doing all these bands. His thing, he'll never watch this, but I drove to Philly to see him. And I drove to New York to see Wayne Shorter.
Oh,
I love sax players.
Yeah.
But he does all this stuff now. It's more like chamber-ish. There's no bass player.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very avant-garde. They hate the term. They don't want you to label anything. But occasionally I'll message him and I'll tell him like, hey, it's your biggest fan in South Carolina. When are you going to do a band with a bass player again? Because, and there's a great drummer he plays with, Tom Rainey. I don't think... When you get to that level, his wife, I think, is the marketing director for ECM Records or something. And he tours, and they play for small crowds. And they're doing something that's very, in the vein of Weather Report, which is Maru, Aaron Miles, and the Downtown Players. There's a whole lot of these guys, like Jim Black, and Andrew D'Angelo is a great sax player. But when they do something, John Zorn, maybe you heard of John Zorn before, but they get together and they do these bands and there's all the different bands that are playing, the Stone, Anthony Braxton plays or stuff like that. But occasionally they'll do something and they'll put it out and then all of a sudden it's a bigger audience, because maybe they're playing more into a hip hop style of drumming, but they're not going for that. But the drummer at the time might be influenced. Or I don't know if you know Roy Hargrove. Mm-hmm. He passed away.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
But, and then they get away from it again. And so I always message him and say, man, you need to do another album like The Shell Game, man, because that's such a cool album. He's like, I don't know why you like that so much. Ah, And there's a band called The Bad Plus. And they recently their keyboard player just left. Don't know why, but they're like the jazz band that makes a lot of money, and they do covers of Black Sabbath or Nirvana. They'll do Smells Like Teen Spirit, or they'll do dun, 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 and they'll of course they'll expand on it, but their audience is big, And there's groups like Snarky Puppy out there who have big audiences now. But there's a kid, a singer, Jacob Collier, who everybody's flipping out over. Jacob Collier is a multi-instrumentalist, but he does Stevie Wonder, you know. And, you know, it must be... I'm glad I'm not that good because it must be really hard, you know, to try to make a living.
And keep it interesting for you.
For yourself. Yeah, because lately to me, it's been... What's interesting to me is maybe the simplest stuff or something fun.
Well, my thing is, my new thing, and I'm hoping to do more, is I've done some shows with a 17-piece band. As long as I've been doing this, I've never sang with a, quote,
big band. That the Odyssey band that I was watching this morning? Yeah. And who put that together?
You know, Don Jamala, I believe. Mm-hmm.
And he just hired you. He said, hey, Bobby, do you want to come sing?
Yeah, he, you know.
Oh, he's, he's a conductor. You have a conductor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in fact, Norm Gagne plays piano with that. But they got
the guy with the cool hair.
But they got a lot of young guys playing in the horn section, you know.
And was there a microphone on everyone, or was that in the room? Because I saw you guys playing in a big, there's a fan of yours that must have posted it. And it was a big sound. But I was wondering, you know, geez.
No, I don't think they mic'd every, you know.
The mix was great. I mean, your vocal was out front, but it wasn't like, the instruments were all there.
But that was, my first show was intimidating for me as well, you know. Because I'm, you know, like I said, Teddy Adams playing, you know, trombone and some.
Oh, cool.
Some, you know.
What? Yeah. He's playing on the gig?
And.
Teddy Adams does a radio show. What is that, 90.3 on? That's him.
Yeah,
that's the guy.
Armstrong.
We're going to do some, going to play for you right now.
Yeah. He's doing his Miles impersonation.
Is that what it is?
But anyway, But singing in front of them, you know, these guys, man, you know, and it's like, again, you know, I'm an entertainer. And
you don't think you're good enough or something.
Thinking, well, yeah, you know, it was until we got into the, you know, the first or second tune, and then, you know, now I'm cool. So we did a couple of shows. I'm going to do another one, I think, in December with them. But that's, if I could go in any direction now, that's what I would do.
Yeah. What do you think about Jeremy Davis and the Equinox guys? Have you checked them out?
Yeah.
He's a sax player.
Yeah.
Yeah, I interviewed him.
Great band.
Yeah, they're good. I saw them on the lawn at the Westin.
They do a lot of gigs out.
It was like a patriotic kind of show. Mm-hmm. To me, it was a little... I think they're into doing fun stuff, and this was a little more serious. Maybe a little bit... brooding.
That's possible.
Kind of. But you know, and I think they're big they're big fans of Sinatra, I think, too. You know,
yeah.
Like doing a show.
What's his name? Clay.
Clay Matt? No.
Can't think of his last name, though. Sorry, Clay.
Clay, you need to change your name to something cool like Ryder.
Yeah.
Which is that's your real last name, isn't it?
It's my mother's name.
Is it your mother's maiden name? Mm-hmm. It's pretty hip.
It was Ritter.
Oh.
And they pronounced it Ryder. And I dropped the IE and put a Y in its place. And I became the Ryder Truck Company.
The Ryder Truck Company? The heck's that? Where are you coming from? What are you doing?
People always ask if I was related. You ever see the
bus? Oh, Ryder. They rent like U-Haul.
Yeah.
Sorry, you lost me there.
Yeah.
That was how I wasn't.
I'm ready for a beer.
Yeah.
I don't know.
What did you say? You're ready for a beer? All right, guys. We're going to. Hey, Bobby. That was fun. Yeah. Whoa. The drink is a prop, everyone. He doesn't actually drink
prop.
Yeah. Bobby, that was a lot of fun, man. Maybe we'll visit again. But you guys can check Bobby out. Do you have a steady gig on? Hold on. Every other Wednesday.
At the Jazz Corner.
And
my big job tonight is at Bayshore, Hilton Head.
What the heck's that?
That's the assisted living.
Oh.
New facility.
That's your big job?
That's my big job.
You play, so you get in there.
I play from 4 to 5:30.
Right, you get in there and you play a song, and then like you play Sweet Georgia Brown, and then you'll finish it, and then somebody will say, hey, can you play Sweet Georgia Brown?
Yeah,
yeah, I recently went, quick thing, I had a student, Jan Gwynn, had her for over 10 years playing guitar, and we started learning a lot of easy standards like Summertime, because they're part of my world, so I turned her on to David Grissom Quintet and Tony Rice Unit, and they would do standards. They would do Not No More Blues. What's the song? It's on the Kind of Blue album. And so that's where I've learned stuff. Not Take Five, not Brubeck. Anyway, but I went and visited her. She's down there by Broad Creek, and she's experiencing dementia, you know.
Oh.
And so the coolest thing was, sometimes you forget how important music is, or maybe there's something really, really down deep somewhere. Because, you know, for me, becoming an entertainer has almost been sort of getting away from all the notes and trying to learn how to play like a simple, I don't know. Like, I went over there and her husband was there, and he still got all his faculties together, and he was kind of pissed off about, we spent all these years working in the school systems, and she was a principal, and look at us now. Look at us now. You know, like, we're over here, and she has to have somebody help her to the bathroom or something, you know? And I said, yeah, man, that's terrible. And I looked at Jan, and I said, hey, Jan, I brought you some music. And so I put the headphones on her, and we used to learn a lot of my songs, too. Just because they would come to show, she'd probably see me play 300 or 400 times.
Oh.
She would come to the Boathouse every week, and you know, as an entertainer, sometimes you wonder to yourself, God, why are they here again? Don't they get tired of this?
Definitely.
Right. Yeah.
I have the same 50 people tonight that I'll have every other week.
Yeah.
And we actually overlooked the Boathouse where.
Uh-huh.
Where the place is.
Oh, okay.
They put an incredible bar upstairs.
Oh, yeah?
I mean, a great bar. They got a piano.
Oh, you're talking about the New Skull Creek Boathouse.
At this...
Oh, Bayshore.
At this Bayshore.
Oh, cool.
And they, this, like I said, the same 50 people come in. But, you know, and I don't mean to sound corny, but they come in and I start playing and they're smiling. And some of them will even dance. They might not make it through the whole song, but they actually get up, and, you know, it is rewarding. I mean, there's no question about it. It's rewarding. I leave there, I feel good. You know,
yeah.
I feel good.
Man. Yeah, yeah, you know? Yeah. When I put the headphones on.
And you don't have to try either. I mean, you know, it's not like you're talking about entertaining.
Right.
You know, I'm talking to them a little bit, but I'm just singing songs, and how you doing? You know, you're okay. You know, yeah, we're good. We love you. I love you too. You know, and
they do probably
easy.
I mean, yeah,
you know, easy but fun.
Yeah,
you know.
When she put the headphones on, and she's listening to the song, he was still talking to me, and I was kind of watching her because I was sort of interested. I've been into watching these videos where the guy is totally like a vegetable. And then they come in and they put on Cab Calloway or something. This guy came alive, this gentleman in an old folks home. She took these headphones off and he's over there still talking to me. And I'd never really spoken to him that much. And I think he was just happy to talk to somebody else. And then she went into this story about her first year of teaching. And I was trying to hold back the tears, you know what
sure.
I mean?
Sure.
And he's still talking over there. And I'm thinking, like, this is why I play music or something. Or this is why, you know, occasionally I get a feeling from music.
Yeah.
It happened yesterday.
Well, I had this woman. She had, they have since left, but evidently multiple strokes and couldn't communicate, but communicated with her eyes. And she would come, he would bring her in the wheelchair, and she'd see me, and I'd go right up to her, or I'd sing a song to her, and eyes, man, just, she was smiling. She was communicating me.
Yeah, smiling,
know,
with her eyes.
And her husband would say, you know, you got to her. You got to her, you know. And again, same thing. I'm the one that's, you know, it's, holy crap, you know, this is cool. This is really cool. Anyway, we can go on for hours about stories, you know.
Yeah, it's cool, though, to think about just turning somebody on for a few minutes, or, you know, like, or because really the charge that you get, you know, you're got a song, you know the song, you've practiced the song a million times, but those people don't get to live, they're not doing six nights a week, or they're not doing, and you know, until you or a kid, you know, until you play that song and you go home and you think, I'm not such a bad guy after all.
I say that to myself all the time when I'm, and we all have self-doubt, you know, but I'm working tonight, you know, I go, well, I guess that must be okay, man, because I'm working again tonight, you know,
I know.
I'm working Saturday night, and I just got a call 2 days ago to work, you know, over here, so I guess I'm okay, you know.
Hell yeah.
Hey, man.
Hell yeah. Thanks, Bobby. We'll catch up with Bobby soon. Go check him out. One of the actual legends of Hilton Head. I mean,
we ended the way you just started.
I know. Tell me. Prove me wrong. Prove me wrong. There's only a few guys, you know. You got Larry Perriga, you got Earl Williams, you got Bobby Ryder. You guys have been here for a long time. Don't forget to click subscribe. Don't forget to hit the bell so you'll get notifications. Please subscribe, and will you subscribe to the local music scene in Bluffton and Hilton Head? We love you. This is Jevin. This is Bobby. We're just two guys singing songs. Thanks, guys.
Black rock, black rock t-shirt, black rock, black rock t-shirt. Black rock t-shirt.